Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, June 22nd. I'm Ray Graff. Here it is, summer in the great Northeast. For some of us, that means hiking season. Not me, but I mean certainly those who aren't lazy slugs who lie on the couch watching the Mets game all summer long. No, our guest today is Alicia Philly, a health and fitness writer, physical therapist, and founder of The Healthy Hiker. She is back to help you get ready to hit the trail and enjoy the trail. So let us go a-wandering along the mountain track. Give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number you want to talk hiking today with Alicia Philly. 800-348-2551 or email voxpop@wamc.org. Alicia Philly, your hiking and fitness calls coming up after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today we talk about how you can stay in shape and hit the trail this summer. We're joined again by Alicia Philly, an internationally published health and fitness writer and founder of The Healthy Hiker, a program that helps hikers regain their health so they can feel confident on the trail and stop worrying about being left behind. As a licensed physical therapist for 30 years, Alicia specializes in the treatment of runners and endurance athletes. She's an avid hiker and runner and is passionate about sharing her love for the great outdoors. So let's share that love. Give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Alicia Philly, how are you?
Hey, Ray, I'm doing well. So glad to be here and chat with you and your listeners again.
Well, I know that you love the outdoors. The weather has been maybe a little hot where you are, but I bet you have been to some wonderful places and done some wonderful hiking. Tell us about some of your recent ones.
Yes, well, it is definitely hot in Texas, where I call home base, but I'm currently in Utah, just hiking as much as I can here in the Wasatch Mountain Range, which is an extension of the Rockies into Utah. So it's fabulous hiking and climbing weather here, but I understand from some of my clients and colleagues up in your area that you guys have had quite a bit of a heat wave yourself.
Well, it's coming, actually. The last last weekend was very cool. It was beautiful up here. We had some rain last night, but there's hot weather coming. And I don't know if that's a good thing or bad thing, but, you know, you got to be in shape to do this right, or you drop dead on the hiking trail. Am I correct?
Being in shape definitely helps. Knowing your limits, knowing what you're ready for, reading trail reviews prior, if it's a new trail to you, so that you know what to expect, you know the approximate distance, and you know the difficulty level. But the real challenge right now, as the temperatures start to heat up, is to take care of yourself in the heat and know the signs of heat stress, heat exhaustion, and heat strength, because those can be very challenging and dangerous situations for a hiker.
What are the signs?
So some of the signs of heat stress are just really understanding that you are feeling hot and knowing how long you've been out in the heat, especially if it gets humid. And I know it does in some parts of the Northeast. It can get quite humid. Heat stress can feel like you're getting cold, even though you know it's hot. You might start shivering, or your skin might feel cool. You might be sweating a lot, or you may stop sweating. That's another sign. If you recognize that you've stopped sweating, that could be a sign of heat stress. Feeling dizzy, faint, confused, very tired. If you feel like your pulse is rapid, or maybe it vacillates between fast and slow. You might even start to feel stomach cramps or nausea, may have vomiting, may feel suddenly like you have diarrhea coming on, have a headache. Those are all signs of heat stress, and you need to make sure that you are really taking care of yourself or someone you're with if any of those signs start, because that could be a sign that you've now gone from heat stress to heat exhaustion. which is an emergency situation.
We're joined today by Alicia Filley, internationally published health and fitness writer. We talk hiking with Alicia every now and again. The number is 800-348-2551. I know you're in Utah, but and maybe the signal is bouncing around in the mountains, but if you can just turn 45 degrees, our signal's not that good on your phone at this point. And I hear you okay, but maybe you're on speakerphone. I don't know. But, you know, you mentioned these terrible signs of heat exhaustion and things like that. If you're out on the hike and you're way out in the middle of nowhere, it's a little too late to worry about that, right?
Well, it's never too late to worry about it. If you recognize some of those signs, the most important thing to do is to get help. If you are alone, if there's a way that you can signal that you're in distress and that you need help, that's what you should do. If you're with someone, having them figure out how to get help is the first thing. But then the second thing right immediately after that is trying to cool your body down. So some ways that you can do that is to get into the shade if you can. Start taking off any unnecessary clothing. You can wet a towel or a handkerchief or a buff, put it on your skin, even your clothes, if you're able to wet your clothes and just place them on your skin to help cool yourself down. The advantage of hiking too is a lot of times you're near a stream or a creek. Put your feet in the creek to start helping to cool yourself down. Take some of that cold water and put it on your skin. The whole point is to really try to get your body temperature down quickly.
It sounds like a plausible idea. Has this sort of thing ever happened to you when you did a solo hike, or do you always travel with someone else?
I hike solo quite a bit. This has not happened to me hiking solo. I'm usually very well prepared. But it has happened to me at home in Texas when I have been out in the heat for a long period of time. Anytime you have an outdoor event and you just get this cumulative heat stress where you are in the heat for long periods of time, it can happen when you're camping sometimes if you're in a very hot and humid environment. And so one of the things to remember when you are in a place where you're going to experience heat for a while is to lower your pace, lower your activity level so that you don't stress your body more than you absolutely need to.
We're joined today by Alicia Filley, internationally published health and fitness writer and founder of The Healthy Hiker, a program that helps hikers regain their health. And our number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. I want to talk about preparing and the ways you logistically prepare for hiking and the ways, now you're a physical therapist, the ways you physically prepare your body to do this. And let's take a quick break and then we'll delve into those topics. You got a question at home, 800-348-2551 is the number. Alicia Filley joins us today. It's hiking. We'll be back. From the great state of Texas, there's a little T-Bone Walker for you on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. If you want to talk to our favorite Texan, Alicia Filley, today, and we're talking about hiking. And before we get into the logistical planning for a hike, let's talk a little bit about one of the things you have done for decades now, and that's physical therapy. And you're really in tune with what muscle groups and how you are supposed to be ready to do a hike, and obviously taking it easy in the beginning and then ramping up your level of difficulty. But let's talk about some of the muscle groups and how you prepare, Alicia Filley, to get on the hiking trail.
Well,
Definitely. So most importantly, obviously, you're going to think about your legs, right? And your legs include your pelvic girdle. Also, you might want to consider your core because that's also helping hold you up. And so let's just start at the bottom and work our way up.
Yeah.
So one of the most important muscle groups that you can train for hiking are your calves. And the calves are made up of two muscles, your gastrocnemius and your soleus. So those two muscles really help to propel you. They're nice endurance muscles, so they can last a long time. They don't burn out very quickly. And so training those muscles are super important. You can do that with calf raises. You can raise up on your toes with both feet, and you can do, this is an exercise that I recommend that you can do anywhere. You can do it while you're waiting in line at the grocery store. You can do it while you're waiting for the microwave to heat up your cup of coffee. You can do it anywhere. So just coming up on your toes and raising your calves. And if that gets a little boring for you, then try bending your knees and doing it. So that targets that other muscle, the soleus. And then if you really want a challenge, try doing it on one leg. And that's going to further be more hiking specific because you're going to, when you step, you're only on one leg. So it's going to challenge your balance. It's going to work those calves. It's a great, great activity that you can do to start training for hiking. Other muscles that are really important, especially for people who experience knee pain on hiking, are your quadriceps. Those are the muscles on the front of your thigh, between your knee and your hip, and those muscles support the knee and take some of the stress off of the knee joint. So keeping those nice and strong is super important. The back of your leg, your hamstrings, those are important for stability as well. And then, of course, your glute muscles, all the muscles in your bum. Those are very important for stability, for your control when you're standing on one leg, for helping you to climb, and then also for supporting you when you're going downhill so that your knee joint doesn't have to take all of the stress of that movement. You've got those nice strong muscles to help hold your body up. So that's really where you want to start when you're thinking about training and getting stronger, working on those particular muscle groups. And then, of course, adding in the core. You have to consider if you're going to be carrying a backpack, what is that going to look like? How are you going to handle that load? So you want to do some upper body training as well. And then if you're going to do something very specific, like a very specific trail that has a lot of scrambling, like I have a client who just did Mount Katahdin, and those kinds of things, you're going to have to need a lot more shoulder stability, a lot more pelvic stability. So you're going to focus a whole lot more on your core. So that's kind of just from the ground up, a way to think about how you want to start training.
Yeah. In your work with Healthy Hiker, do you ever find people who say, you know, I hurt myself hiking, and you take one look at them and say, why did you even start? You are not physically able to do this. It requires a little commitment, does it not?
Well, I think that there's a trail for everybody. And I say everybody, meaning everybody type, everybody fitness level, there is a specific trail for you. Some people do take on more than they're ready for, and they can experience injury from that. But I would never discourage anyone from hiking, because hiking can be something as simple as a walk in nature. So you can find a city park that's got some lovely nature trails and start there. And that's the place to start. So, like I said, there's a trail for everybody.
We're going to hit the phones in a moment, but I have to know, have you ever calculated how many miles a year you are on the trail?
I don't. I know that there are some hikers who keep very detailed spreadsheets and journals and what have you. But honestly, anytime I'm on the trail, it's just fabulous. And for me, it's about that experience. It's not a competition, but if you're training for something specific, or if you have some very specific endurance goals, then there certainly is a place for keeping that kind of a log.
But it's thousands.
Not mine.
It's thousands of miles for you a year, right? You're
thousands.
You're in Utah now, right?
I am in Utah now.
Do you walk back?
I was going to say, do you walk back to Texas?
All right, let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Alicia Philly joins us. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Beryl in the Berkshires. Beryl, you're on.
Hi, you guys. Hi, Alicia. Yeah, I just spent the winter in New Mexico, and
nice.
I know that The hiking there is wonderful, and what part of what makes it wonderful is there are no ticks in New Mexico, and I'm sure there aren't any in Utah either. So, however, I'm back in the Berkshires again, where I've lived for the last 10 years, and boy, I have hiked all kinds of places over the last month or two, and the ticks are particularly bad this year, and it's kind of going out onto the back roads or the trails. I mean, I know this sounds dramatic, but you're sort of taking your life in your hands. I'm on my way to the Fairview Hospital right now to get tested for tick-borne illness. Yeah, and it seems like everyone sooner or later ends up with Lyme or one of those illnesses. Do you have any tips other than tips for ticks, other than just being religious in checking yourself? And I have two dogs that are very furry.
All right, well, we'll put them on in a moment. Go ahead, Alicia.
Yeah, thank you for calling. And that's a great question. You know, I'm hearing from everyone that this is a very bad tick season. For whatever reason, it's not just in New England, but I'm hearing it all along the entire eastern seaboard how bad the ticks are this year. And so that just comes as part of the territory when you're not in those arid, lovely mountains like you are in New Mexico. So, of course, being religious about checking yourself is the foremost thing that you can be doing. And also, you can get repellent. You can soak your clothing and spray your clothing with Prometheum, and that will help repel ticks. Of course, wearing long sleeves and long pants, high socks, things to keep them off of your skin, which I know can be challenging when it is hot and humid. But I recommend, you know, looking at outdoor kinds of clothing, or even fishing wear, clothing that's designed for fishermen and women can sometimes be really, really helpful because it's very, very lightweight and breathable, but it keeps your skin covered. So those are the best tips. And if you've got, you know, your fur babies, you really have to be vigilant in protecting them as well, but trying to keep them and yourself out of the tall grass, trying to stay on well-traveled trails. You know, the minute you go off trail or you go onto a trail that hasn't really seen a lot of people or dogs or animals, then you're going to disturb all of that grass, and they're going to like be like, lunch is here, and come out for the buffet. So those are all the tips that I can give you, but just be real careful out there for sure.
Beryl, thanks a lot for the call. Alicia Philly joins us today. We talk hiking and fitness on the program. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Well, I did not know that. You do not have to deal with ticks down in your neck of the woods. Is that true?
No, in Texas, ticks can be very bad. Yes, for sure. But in Utah, I haven't seen any. I'm not positive that they're not here. Like, I think that you certainly could find that. And probably not in the southern part of the state, which is more of a desert climate, but certainly up in the mountains and any of the prairie, you know, type environments, you can certainly find them.
By the way, did you call Beryl's dogs fur babies?
I did.
Oh, my gosh. I thought you had seen pictures of my kids. That's interesting. Let's go to Joel in New Lebanon. Joel, you're on.
Hi. I'm wondering about starting to do trail running. I'm a longtime hiker and backpacker and in a whole variety of environments. But I'm interested in starting to do trail running. I haven't, I get bored of running on roads and streets. I'd like to go to the places that make me the happiest and be on trails, but I'm wondering if you have any tips or suggestions, you know, other than, you know, basic stretches and things like that, but, you know, in terms of overall timing and gear and things like that to get started in trail running. Thanks.
All right, Joel.
Sure, Joel. Thanks for calling. Great question. So the first thing I would recommend if you're considering trail running is to go ahead and get a pair of trail running shoes. And the reason I suggest that is because they're going to be you're going to have a stiffer bottom. So it's unlike a street running shoe, which is, you know, pretty flexible. because you're running on a very hard surface, a trail running shoe is going to give you more protection from rocks and roots and things like that that your feet are going to hit. And believe me, you can get bruises on the bottom of your feet trail running over, you know, if you're in a very rocky area. So the other thing about a trail running shoe is that it's going to have some protection over the front of your toes, which a street running shoe will not have. So it's going to have a little bit more reinforcement there. So if you do hit something, you hit a tree root or something like that, you're going to be able to protect your feet a little bit more. So that's my first suggestion. And then secondly, the thing to know about trail running is that you really have to pick up your feet a lot more than when you run on the street. So sometimes, I don't, never seen you run, but sometimes people who run on pavement or on a track, they can get into a habit of sort of shuffling their feet almost. You don't really need that much clearance. And the big difference is when you get on the trail and you've got a whole variety of things that you're stepping over, you need to pick up your feet higher than you would normally. Otherwise, you're going to trip. So with that comes the need to strengthen like your hip flexors to make sure that you're also strengthening your hamstrings. So you bend your knee and then you can swing it out and have a little bit more clearance because you bent it a little farther. So these are some things you might just think about as you start your trail running and just to be cognizant of. And then further is balance. Your balance is going to be challenged a lot more on the trail than it is on the street. So you might want to do some single leg kinds of exercises like single leg deadlifts. Those are great exercises for strengthening the glutes and the hamstrings and also challenging your balance. Anything, any kind of exercise, really, you can almost adapt to doing on one leg. And so that you are starting to train yourself to be a little bit more aware of your balance and also train your balance reactions to be more responsive.
Joel.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. Number here is 800-348-2551. We're joined again by Alicia Philly, internationally published health and fitness writer, avid hiker, and founder of The Healthy Hiker. And that's a program that helps hikers regain their health so they can feel confident on the trail. Just a moment here before the next call about The Healthy Hiker. Is this something that is a group setting where people get together almost and just talk about their issues, or is this a one-on-one deal that you do?
Yeah, so my program is a six-month one-on-one program. So I personally coach someone to achieve their goals depending on what they are. So all of my clients have completely different goals, whether they're training to keep up with their family on a multi-day trip to Disney World, or if they're training to go from rim to rim in the Grand Canyon or to summit a mountain like Katahdin or a 14er. So I design a program specifically for them that they follow, and I coach them through the whole process, what they need for their equipment, what they need for their nutrition, how they need to go about their training, and we get them to their goal.
Do you ever throw out a person in your program who's just not following along? I mean, I think you'd probably end up doing that with me if I did that.
Yeah. That's where the coaching comes in, right? There's lots of reasons that people might give up. They might be discouraged. They might not want to continue. And so really, though, a lot of those things happen when they pick a program on their own and they get in over their head. Maybe they start too far advanced and then they get frustrated because they can't do it, or they injure themselves, or they feel too sore. So it's really all about finding that sweet spot of challenging but not overwhelming, and then progressing at a rate that lets you see progress but doesn't completely overwhelm you.
All right, before we get
back. We can do it, Ray. We can get you out there.
Oh, I think that you're way off on that. Way off. All right, before we get back to the phones, let's tackle this email from Kim. And I alluded to this, and I thought we would talk about this a little later on in the program. But Kim wants to do it now, and I'm in. My husband and I quite a bit hike. She left out the hiking bit, but I'm inferring it. My husband and I hike quite a bit, usually anywhere between 7 to 15 miles with medium to large-sized backpacks. My husband often experiences an achiness and pain on both sides of his torso after a hike. We use hiking poles, usually two, with a heavier pack or just one with a lighter load. Any thoughts how to prevent or alleviate this discomfort? And that's from Kim.
Yeah, she doesn't mention how heavy her backpack is.
Medium to large, so that's pretty heavy, right?
Well, it can be, that can be the size of the backpack. And so it, you know, it really depends. So the first thing is to really look at your backpack and making sure that it's fit well, that that you have a light as load as possible. Sometimes there are budgetary constraints. If you want to go ultra light, that can be very, very expensive. It's not necessary, but you also want to try to not be super heavy with your equipment. You want to have it in kind of that somewhere between anywhere between 20 and 40 pounds, depending on your size, depending on how long you're going to be out there, something like that. So you want to make sure that the backpack is really fitting well. That's what I would first recommend. And you can do that by going to one of your local outfitters. I know like the big chains like REI will do that for you, but a lot of times your local outfitter will help you with that too. So you want to make sure that's good. Second thing you want to do is just make sure that your core is strong. So doing some core training, and a lot of people think that the core is just your belly, and your core is really your entire torso. The core is defined as a corset that just runs around your whole torso, and you want to make sure that all of those muscles are really strong and working well to support your body weight so that you're not feeling a particular strain in one place or another. I often say it's like the difference between holding a sleeping child and an awake child. You know, if you hold a child that's asleep, they're complete dead weight. But if you hold them when they're awake, they're helping you. And so they seem lighter, even though their weight actually hasn't changed. Same thing with your core muscles. You want to make sure that they're active and working and engaged so that they're not just dead weight on your legs.
You know, Kim, go ahead, keep going.
That's what I would recommend.
You know, Kim and her husband, they'll hike 7 to 15 miles. That's a rather long hike, is it not?
Well, if you're backpacking, it's not too bad, actually, because you have all day to do that. So that's pretty typical for a backpacker.
All right, we'll get back into the backpacks in a minute, and I have a question about any sort of mathematical ratio you may have about the duration of a hike compared to what you need to take with you. But let's go to the phones and grab one more call before the next break. Chris in Saugerties. Chris, you're on.
Hi. I was wondering if you have ever encountered a potentially hazardous situation with a wildlife, be it a bear or more specifically a bobcat.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks for calling. And that's a great question. And really that's the number one concern of really everyone who's out on the trail. Bobcats are having a banner year. They're getting a lot of media and play this year. One of the reasons I think, and this is just purely my own speculation about animal behavior, it's because we've had such late spring snow in most of the mountainous regions that I feel like maybe the animals are at a lower elevation. And that's why there's been so many encounters lately. That's, like I said, that's just purely my speculation, because I know it just seems to be becoming in the news a little bit more lately. I have not had an encounter with a bobcat. I have seen bears, that follow general safety, which is to try and scare the animal away, you know, ideally to have some sort of noisemaker, or, you know, if you're in bobcat country, it's most ideal to travel in groups of two or more, because they won't typically attack you when there's more than one person. Mm. You know, you have to be super careful about your pets if you're hiking with a dog and small children, because they can be easy targets. So you want to be mindful of that. But, For me personally, I have encountered bears. It's not ever been a big deal. I've never felt unsafe. I've mostly just, experienced wonder. I will tell you my worst animal encounter, though, was hiking on a trail and being attacked by a Cooper's hawk.
Ooh.
So that was really scary, honestly. It must have had a nest close by, and it swooped down and screeching and talons, you know, flexed out and
wow.
ready to attack. That one was a little bit scary.
Wow. Chris, thanks for the call. Alicia, do you carry a weapon when you do these hikes?
I do not. I carry bear spray when it's appropriate and I'm in bear country, but I do not carry a weapon. I will have a multi-use tool that may have a knife on it, because that's just good safety
yeah.
for when you're hiking.
But I do not. And I know that's a little bit of a controversial topic. There will be people who have strong feelings one way or the other. That's just my policy.
Number to call here is 800-348-2551. If you have a hiking or fitness question for Alicia Philly, the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back. We're joined today by Alicia Philly, who'll be walking back from Utah to Texas very soon. And it's hiking and fitness today on the program, 800-348-2551. What's the longest hike you've ever been on?
I'd say close to 20 miles.
Right, that's a long...
And that was a day hike.
Okay,
so that wasn't
one day?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and probably a lot faster than you would go on a, it's not uncommon for a backpacker, especially a seasoned backpacker, someone who's maybe doing a through hike to do 20 plus miles a day. That's not uncommon, but that was just a day hike up to a peak that was just kind of fun.
I'm sure it was fun. The thing is, how much stuff do you have to bring? Let's go through your checklist of what you would bring on a hike. Maybe not 20 miles, but let's say 10.
Yeah, so there is a checklist. It's called the 10 Essentials, and it's what everyone should really have with you when you're hiking. The first thing, of course, is to have a navigation tool. So at its most basic, that means a map of your trail. You can also have a smartphone, but you want to remember that you can't always rely on a smartphone. So you ideally to have both a printed map and either a map on your smartphone that you can use without cellular so that you can conserve your phone battery. I also recommend that folks, when they get to a trailhead, if there's a map at the beginning of a trail, that they take a picture of it also, just because sometimes there's a little variations and you want to just make sure you have all the navigation tools that you would possibly need. And that would include something really basic like a compass to help you find your way if you were to get disoriented. Second thing is plenty of water. I always advise, especially when it's hot, that you take more water than you think you're going to need. So typical rule of thumb is a half a liter of water per hour that you anticipate hiking. But then I always take a bit more than that just to make sure that you've got everything you need. If something were to happen and you had to get, be stuck out there for longer than you anticipated, you wanted to make sure that you had enough hydration. The same thing with food. So you want to make sure that you have snacks and you want to have more than you think you're going to need. You burn a lot of calories, more than you think you are going to, perhaps, especially if it's very hot or if the trail is steeper than you anticipate. So you want to just have some extra snacks to bring along as well. A light source. So even if you're out there during the day, it's great to have a headlamp or a very small flashlight. Don't rely on your phone's flashlight if you were to get stuck for some reason and had to come out at night. You want to make sure you're able to get where you need to go in the dark. Sun protection. So you want to have on sunscreen, a hat, any kind of long sleeve clothing to protect yourself from the sun. Super important. If you get sunburn, it really impacts your body's ability to regulate temperature. So again, in the heat, you want to preserve that ability as much as you can. So making sure that you're protected from the sun. And then a first aid kit. Doesn't have to be, you don't have to have stitches, but you might want to have like some Band-Aids and maybe some antiseptic ointment and some tape to protect if you start to get a blister, maybe some Tylenol or something over the counter that you like in case you start to feel an ache or a pain. So a small first aid kit is always advisable. And then extra clothing. So you might want to, if you are in a place where it gets cool at night, or the weather changes very quickly, you would pack an extra sweatshirt or an extra, lightweight jacket just to have it in case you needed it. Like I mentioned before, a multi-use tool is helpful. Most of these really are just insurance policies. So if the worst were to happen and you needed to construct a shelter or build a fire, a multi-use tool might be really helpful. So that you could make sure that you were protected while you were out there. That would also include things like having waterproof matches or a lighter, you know, something very, very lightweight to carry, an emergency bivy, you know, one of those aluminum space blankets, you know, very lightweight, but something that you could protect yourself and keep yourself warm. You don't have one of those in a pinch, you can use a big construction garbage bag, just tear a hole in the top and wear it over your head like a poncho. And those are really wonderful about helping you to stay warm. So those are the basics. Well, I suggest that you have that no matter how far you're hiking. And it's really important for me to remind veteran hikers that these things are important, because veteran hikers are really the worst. We get out there and we think, oh, we're only going 3 miles, or we're only going to need a bottle of water or what have you. And then something piques our interest. Maybe we decide, well, I've got a lot of daylight left, I'm feeling good, I'll add on a couple of extra miles. And that's when you can get yourself into a situation where you need something that you don't have. So my advice is to always have the 10 essentials, no matter how far you're going, no matter where you're going.
Wait, okay. Most of these things are fairly lightweight, but getting back to Kim's point about the backpack, and I can tell you that my children go to school in backpacks that I would not wish upon anybody. They're so heavy. They're so full of things. You're going on an all-day hike, let's say 12 hours. That's a half a liter of water an hour. And that alone is heavy. Do you have your own? Do you have a Sherpa with you who helps you carry the stuff?
Oh, no. But sometimes there are water sources along the way so that you can fill up, and maybe you don't have to take quite as much. You can have a water filter so that you can get water from natural sources and filter it so that it's safe to drink. You could do that. But yeah, undeniably, water is heavy. And that is really, water and food are the variables. You have what's called a base weight in your backpack, whether you are a hiker or a backpacker. That's your weight of everything that you're going to take outside of water and food. And the idea is to try to get your base weight as light as you can feasibly, so that when you add on water and food, you know you're starting from the lowest point as you can possibly get, because the water and the food are the variables that will be heavy.
All right, this email kind of dovetails with our conversation. This is from a worried girlfriend and a current argument with her partner. So be very careful, mm-hmm. Alicia. How necessary is it for a solo hiker on the Adirondack High Peaks trails to bring a personal locator beacon or satellite communication device?
Well, I think it's always a good idea if you are hiking alone and you're out in the backcountry or out of cellular range. I mean, I just think it's an insurance policy, and you may never have to use it. And wouldn't that be wonderful to waste your money completely on an emergency device?
Yeah.
But boy, if you needed it, it could be a matter of life and death. So,
I mean, have you ever had to use something like that when you were out there in the wilderness?
Thank God I have not had any situations like that. No, I haven't been able to. But I do have a satellite device, just in case. And, you know, thank goodness I've never had to use it. But I do always think it's a good idea to have a way that you can signal for emergency help.
We're joined today by Alicia Filley, an internationally published health and fitness writer, founder of The Healthy Hiker, and a licensed physical therapist for 30 years. Get you ready for the hiking trails. The number here is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. This is from another Kim. I've been treating my plantar fasciitis since March of this year with care from my ortho provider. I've tried physical therapy. I recently wore a full-length boot to give my foot a rest for 2 weeks. Now that I am out of the boot, I want to know what I can do to keep my foot healthy so I can get back to hiking. And that's from Kim in Saratoga.
Hey, Kim. I'm sorry to hear about your plantar fasciitis. That is a real tough one. It is something that once you get it, it's very hard to get over. But there are some things that you can do to help prevent it and to maybe help alleviate some of the problems with it. First thing I would do is I would really take a look at the shoes that you're wearing, not just for hiking, but you're also your everyday shoes. I would want to make sure that your shoes have really good arch support in them.
So if you're wearing things like Toms or Vans or Converse or any of the shoes, or if you like to go around barefoot, that could be contributing to your problem and contributing to not being able to get over the issue. So I would always recommend that you look at your everyday shoes and wear something that really has good support. And then I would look at your hiking shoes and make sure that they are good, well-fitting, and that you break them in slowly if they're fairly new. Sometimes you can make a training error and that can trigger plantar fasciitis. So like you have a pair of shoes and they feel really comfortable and they're really good, and all of a sudden you want to go out and hike 6, 8, 10 miles in them without breaking them in. And sometimes that can trigger the plantar fasciitis and really strain your foot. So making sure you break in your shoes and making sure again that they fit well. The other thing you can do is you can actually exercise your feet. So one of the fun things that you can do even when you're sitting around in a meeting at work is to draw the alphabet with your foot in the air.
Oh, come on.
And that will work all, yeah, for real. That works all those muscles in your foot, helps to keep them nice and strong. Another exercise you can do is I call the towel scrunch. So you can put your feet on a towel and use your toes and scrunch up the towel and drive, you know, pull it towards you like a little hand towel. And then if you really want to play games, you can get a little golf ball and try to pick it up with your foot and put it in a cup. So that's another fun exercise. But all of those are geared towards keeping your feet nice and strong.
Hang on. I'm trying to picture this. Is it even possible to pick up a golf ball with one foot?
It is. It is. You need to go home and try it.
You know, I'll say yes, but I'll mean no. We're joined by Alicia Philly today, and we're talking about hiking and physical fitness and physical therapy. What's the most common injury that a veteran hiker will come to you with?
A lot of times it's knee pain, although plantar fasciitis is a very close second. But a lot of times it's knee pain. Most hikers will start to experience knee pain when they're going downhill, and that pain oftentimes is right at the front of the knee. It can really be quite debilitating, and so that is a very, very frequent complaint of most hikers.
I mean, knee pain, I got it. I'm in my mid-50s. I get it all the time. At a certain age, everybody has joint pain, right?
Not necessarily, no. That's not true.
Another thing I'm wrong
and
about.
If you keep yourself nice and strong, that really improves your chances of avoiding knee pain. And it's not just the muscles that I mentioned earlier, the quadriceps and the hamstrings, which are on the upper leg, the thigh area, but also keeping your glute muscles nice and strong. Because if they're not doing their job, then the poor knee gets the brunt, has to bear the brunt of all the work.
All right, this email came in from Barry, who's a bass player, so we have to be very nice to him. Barry says, allow me to expand on a couple of things that were said. Along with a map and a compass, must be the knowledge of how to use them. Our society relies on battery-powered devices. You don't want to bet your life on those. And carrying an extra sweatshirt was mentioned. That made me think about the old adage, cotton kills. When cotton gets wet, it loses all of its insulating properties, so synthetic or wool, even though it might be scratchy, is preferable. Do you agree with that, Alicia?
Well, I do agree that you need to be able to to read a map and know how to use a compass. Absolutely. Do you have to be really adept at orienteering? Not necessarily. So it's not necessary that you have these advanced skills if you're going on a well-marked trail and you can familiarize yourself with it. But any type of map reading and compass using skills you can have are going to be just that much more insurance to staying where you want to be and helping yourself get back on track if you get off course. So I agree that, yeah, everybody should know how to find north, maybe know where they started and be able to orient themselves so that they can try and go in the direction of the trail if they happen to get off trail. And I did say sweatshirt. Yeah, cotton is, it depends absolutely where you are. And synthetic is great also. Wool is great also. A light jacket. My personal motto is always pack a puffy. So that's what I always
That's my motto too, but I don't think it's the same. Yeah. All right. Anyway, go keep going.
Yeah. Let's keep it hiking related here, right?
All right. Fine.
So I'm referring to a down or a synthetic down jacket. You know, one of those puffy jackets. Super yeah. lightweight. You can fold it up. And it folds up tiny, like almost sometimes a lot of them will even fold up into their own pocket, you know, just really a lightweight, easy thing to carry. But a light jacket would be fine. And in some instances, cotton might be helpful in helping you stay cool because you can get it wet and it would hold water and help you to cool off a little bit. So, but more often than not, technical type gear, wool, synthetic, that's the kind of clothing that you want to go towards.
You know, all of this hiking that you have done over your life, what is your favorite one?
You know, that's a really hard one. It's like asking me which of my kids is my favorite.
We'll get to that one in a moment.
because they all have their unique characteristics and challenges and features. I love being in the mountains. I love being up in elevation. So that's just always a favorite for me. But there's something incredibly unique about going to the bottom of the Grand Canyon. And that is such a spectacular event that most people don't get to experience. So Grand Canyon Rim to Rim was really right up there for me. There's another really unique hike in the Arches National Park called Fiery Furnace. That's just, again, another really unique environment. But, I love them all. Anytime, just give me a trail. I'm happy.
Have you done the high peaks of the Adirondacks?
I have not, but it's on my list. I have hearing so much about it, so I would love to. Although a couple of my clients tell me it's getting really crowded out there.
As I said at the outset of the show, I watch a lot of Mets baseball, and they're losing to Houston now, so let's not bring this up with a person who's from Texas. But, you know, I've heard it gets crowded up there, but it's beautiful. I mean, it's a place that you should see, and when you do that, you come back, you do the show live and in person here.
Love to. That sounds like a deal.
All right, fair enough. Now, how do people find you online? I know you're all over the place.
Yeah, they can find me at www.thehealthyhiker.com. That's really the best place to go.
All right, and where are you headed next, Alicia Philly?
Well, next I'm actually going to be doing something completely new, and that's raft camping along the New River in West Virginia. So I'm going to be doing that for a couple of weeks in July. I'm really excited and looking forward to that. But otherwise, I'll just be hiking out here in Utah as much as I can and then hitting the trail in Texas in the fall.
You know, not for nothing, West Virginia is right around the corner from New York's Adirondacks. Stop on up.
Oh, wow. I'd love to.
It's only about a 10-hour, 12-hour drive. And probably for you, that's a 7-hour hike. Hey, Alicia, thank you so much for being here.
Hey, it was a pleasure, Ray. Great talking with you again.
Talk to you soon. Support comes from Gardner Supply at Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts, offering annuals, perennials, vegetables, trees, and shrubs, indoor and outdoor plants, and garden and landscape information, hadleygardencenter.com. Williams Lumber and Home Centers, local owners, local employees, supplying outdoor cooking supplies and grills from Weber, Traeger, Komodo Joe, and Dutchess, Ulster, Columbia, and Greene Counties, williamslumber.com. And Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever, agstewardship.org. Once again, thanks to Alicia Philly for joining us today. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the calls. Thanks for the emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our intrepid engineer. Amber Sickles took the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow we dig in the dirt. It's gardening. We'll see you at 2:00.